Do you like to play some football?
And welcome to another edition, another episode of Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast. I'm George Schroeder.
And I'm Brad Edwards, and it's kind of a slow week for college football news this week, but there's a really big event that's coming up on the college football calendar, like pretty much around the time that you're listening to this, that I think is going to prevent that from being true, the slow news week.
Forever.
Next week and the week after that. Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of activity coming up, and we'll talk about that in just a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But first, let's talk about Subsplash, our presenting partner, and we're glad that they're with us. Subsplash allows your church community to access messages, resources, and even give to your church from one place. It also equips church leaders to be able to connect with their congregation in ways they never could have done before. Subsplash is so much more than just a church software. It brings people together, it empowers giving, fosters discipleship, and transforms lives. If you're interested in learning more, I encourage you to book a demo today at subsplash.com/SBC. Use that link, you get a special discount for churches, but you do have to use the link for the discount. Again, it's subsplash.com/SBC, subsplash.com/SBC. So Brad, you teased it. Something happens this week. And as you're listening to this, something happens. We don't really know when you listen to this. You've downloaded it, and we appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for listening. But it's either about to happen or it's just happened. Something, just an occurrence on the calendar that we've all got to get used to. And why don't you tell us what's going on?
Yeah. So this podcast is being published on Monday, April 15th. On Tuesday, April 16th. The transfer window reopens.
Right.
And
we need that Star Trek
the portal. That's right. You have that visual, the portal opening up.
When I was doing radio for SiriusXM back in the day, whenever someone said portal, the producers got really good at doing that little noise. Yeah. I can't do it, but they had the sound effect of the Star Trek doors opening on the original Star Trek ship.
Yeah.
And they would do that every time. So, the portal, however you envision it, maybe it looks like the Fansville commercials where your quarterback got sucked into the portal.
Into a vortex.
You kept to the Dr. Pepper. I don't know. It opens up. So I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, that's good. It's all about visualization. So, so the portal, if we want to call it that, reopens. And you may remember, there was a whole lot of activity after the regular season ended, or after the season ended back at the beginning of January. And that was highlighted by a lot of players leaving two particular schools, one Alabama, another one was Washington. But obviously there were guys transferring out of pretty much everywhere. Then the portal closed. And now teams are going through spring practice. The biggest names in college football, they are either just finished spring practice this past weekend or are going to finish it this coming weekend. There may be a few exceptions to that, but most of them are either done with spring ball or are about to finish it. And so that's when you're going to see some of these names come in. Some of them won't be surprising. Like if you're a fan of a certain team and, you have a guy who was highly recruited and he's just been sitting there at number two on the depth chart, spring forces. He's not going to get to number one. He decides he wants to go somewhere where he's got a chance to start. We all get it. Those are expected. But these days, I think we can expect the unexpected as well, which is that there are going to be some guys who either you thought that, was going to be a starter that now after going through spring, he doesn't think he's going to be a starter, so he's getting out of town. Or there's a guy who very clearly was a number one and would have started, but he's had an offer to go to a bigger program where he's a chance to now either contend for championships or get more NIL money or both. And that is really what makes this newsworthy. And we're going to see some names that I have no doubt that people are going to be really surprised by. And then, you know, then the whole race is on until the portal closes. I don't remember what the date is when it closes, but that'll be a few weeks.
Yeah, no. And you should expect that people leave your roster, and people you didn't expect to leave your roster. You thought that was all settled. And nope, I'm sorry. That's the way it's going to work. Now, unless we think, well, that's never going to happen at the, you know, with the biggest of big boys, maybe you're a fan of, you know, I don't know, Alabama or, Georgia has done a great job not losing players, but even those schools, we've seen lose players. So yeah, I really do think that's something to be watching. And it's just, you know, we have adjusted to the changes in the college football calendar over the years. It used to be that, you know, you look forward to the actual seasons, and you look forward to signing day, first Wednesday in February. They still have that, by the way, but we only care about the signing day that's in December now, and you don't even really care about that like you did when it started, because of how the fact that it's all about transfers and NIL and everything else. And then there were like, hey, when's my team's spring practice begin, and when's my team's spring game? Which, by the way, a lot of those are happening or have just happened, and we'll get into a few of those at some point here over the next few weeks for sure, in some form or fashion. And then there were things like, if you're a really college football fan, you'd get used to media days. I'm sure I'm leaving some things out of the college football calendar, but media days when the conferences would bring all the teams together and stuff like that. There were just that was your college football calendar for years. You understood it. Now it's dizzying with the portal, and I hope, Brad, that I hope they cut down on the length of time that you can be in the portal, and also that they work on when that is. For example,
yeah,
to go back to the one that opens in December, the season's still going on for a lot of these teams.
Right,
and I'm not just
right.
talking about playoff participants, and obviously we're going to have more playoff participants going forward, right? 12 this coming year. But the season's still going on for like roughly half the schools, and you got guys opting into the portal. Why can't you just wait until after the title game? That seems pretty easy, right? And then just say, now, yeah. I understand part of the problem is transferring with that actual, and we don't like to talk about this, but the actual spring semester, right, begins at a lot of schools.
School? You're talking about academics, George?
Yeah, I know. You see, I'm sort of sitting here talking myself into and out of it, but that particular calendar time slot for the portal is a real problem. It's a real problem for the teams. I think it's actually a problem for the players too. And that ends up being more important. I mean, we have to think about the players first. So, but anyway, but I digress. We can talk more about this later. So,
the
portal's open. Rosters are going to change. Last year, Colorado had a wholesale roster change after the spring when the portal reopened. Now, part of that was because Deion, you know, finally they went through spring and realized that he was ready to have a lot of them go. But you could see that happen too, and not just where there's a new coach.
Yeah, and I think the other we have a tendency to not think about, just because we've never had a reason to think about it throughout all of our years of being college football fans up until now, is that you've got a whole bunch of schools with a lot of money available for NIL who mm-hmm. have been sitting there for the last 2.5 months, and they've got a staff full of analysts who have been evaluating other programs and
sort of potential guys that you think might want to leave, or maybe you don't think that, but you think that'd be a guy we ought to look at and mention.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one would ever tamper. I mean, come on. Nobody would ever reach out and do anything they shouldn't do by making some contact with a guy or with one of his buddies back home or his high school coach or something. And by the way, a lot of high school coaches, almost every high school coach, the vast majority, I think, want, you know, they want to do things above board. I'm not trying to pop on them, but you can find a third party you could talk with. No one would ever do that.
No,
never.
But yeah, to your point though, like, you know, they've had a few months now to kind of analyze the roster. Okay, these are the positions where we either need to have more depth or we need a better starter. And now it's who's out there that after. Why don't you get so and so to talk to, you know, somebody who's close to this kid, find out if he'd be interested. All that stuff's been going on for the last few weeks as teams have been going through spring practice. And that's why some of these surprising moves are going to happen. It's not because they just, you know, it was not a knee jerk thing. Like, these are conversations that have been, you know, weeks in the making that'll end up resulting in some of these players jumping ship and moving somewhere else. And so that's just kind of the new norm right now. And I think as a coach, especially if you're, you know, at a contending program, you have to consider it a major success if you can get out of the spring portal like window. You know, if that thing opens then closes again and there has been no under your deep, you got to be really happy about that, because that is that's going to be hard to do, I think, you know, moving forward in college football, because there are just so many conversations going on that even the head coaches that think that they have total control over everything going on in the program, they don't know that this guy is being talked to by someone else and just comes out of the left field. And next thing you know, guy's coming in telling the coach that he's leaving. So what are you doing, George?
I'm trying to do the door. That's not the door sound. I thought I was trying to do the door sound. I've been sitting here while we've been talking.
Whatever your sound effect is, it's not. It's just not coming through your mic well enough. I heard a little noise.
It's annoying. Let me just tell you that much.
It's your portal sound effect.
Yeah, it was supposed to be the portal sound effect. It's supposed to sound like the door opening and closing on the original, I think the original Star Trek. If you guys can think back that far, there was a show called Star Trek. It was on something called TV. For you young guys.
We need a producer on the switchboard, you know, in order to kind of get those sound effects for us.
It was one failed attempt. That's what it was.
It was good. So, well, hey, one other, I just add one other thing. If you don't have anything else to add, we can move on from this part of it.
But yeah, I've got one other topic, but go ahead.
Right. Keep going. Right. I was just thinking that, and now because of your sound effect, I forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, that was the episode when the bridge got amnesia or something.
I don't know, exactly.
Everybody on the bridge.
No, it was something related to NIL, and I can't even recall what it was. But
Well, maybe you can jump back if you think of it. But one other thing, good friend of ours and former colleague Stuart Mandel, who is now with the Athletic, one of the founding members of the Athletic's college football team. He just published recently here a report from his spring visit to Columbus, Ohio. And it's very interesting because there's a lot of intrigue around Ohio State, which is interesting because of how good the Buckeyes have been. But all of a sudden, Ryan Day can't beat, supposedly, Michigan, right? And so all of a sudden, and by the way, even when they couldn't beat Michigan in 2022, they were a missed field goal away from beating Georgia in that semifinal, at which point, sorry, Frogs, I'm not saying it would have been whatever that score was, but they were going to win. Yeah, they were going to win the national championship. That's how close they were, was a last second field goal attempt away. But that the mood in and around Columbus has been really despondent, I guess, since they lost to Michigan again last November and didn't make the playoff. And then everybody basically opted out, and they did, and they had nobody basically to play in the Cotton Bowl against Missouri, and lost 14-3 with an offense that was non-existent. And I'm just gonna be honest with you, that team was a lot better than Missouri. A lot better. They were essentially playoff caliber for much of the year. A lot better than Missouri had they played at full strength, but instead, just the entire aura around the program was really despondent. Things were dismal. And all of a sudden, this is what happens in spring. Everything's great. But they've got some reasons at Ohio State, I think. Now, we're going to talk about something later. Maybe broached a little bit here as to why that maybe you can't go crazy about it. But Ohio State appears to have figured out the NIL game. And And we're going to be talking name, image, and likeness. And when we say NIL, we obviously mean just the infusion of cash that people are now giving to players through various means. We're not talking about the quarterback gets his photograph on the billboard for Columbus area Motors, although that could happen. But they went on a spending spree fueled by Ohio State donors who poured money into two collectives, NIL collectives. And the first thing they did was they essentially re-signed 7 guys, five of whom were defensive players who were projected as first or second day draft day picks. So you're talking about top three rounds, if I'm thinking right.
Yep, that's right.
The idea that you could do that is amazing. Not that you could sign them to that, but that you could talk somebody who's going to be going or projected to go in the top three rounds of the NFL draft and they'll stay because they can make enough money in college is amazing. So they retained a bunch of guys that people thought were going to go out to the NFL early entry, you know, declare for the NFL. And then they went to the portal and they pulled Will Howard, who was an all-Big 12 quarterback from Kansas State. We can talk about him after a bit. They pulled Quinshon Judkins, who's at Ole Miss, was an all-SEC running back, really good running back. They took Caleb Downs, the All-America freshman safety, or freshman All-America safety from Alabama, and they took Alabama starting center, Seth McLaughlin, too. I mean, that they basically filled a bunch of holes. Now, again, I want to talk about quarterback at some point here, but there is a mood around the program that is way different all of a sudden. And it's because they anteed up a bunch of bucks. And do you want to know how much money they spent, Brad?
How much, George?
I want to know, too. I don't really know.
I hope you know, because I don't.
Not too long ago, Ryan Day, the head coach, told a group of business people that in order to, what he said at the time, maintain his roster, which was, you know, they have high-level future pros, it would take $13 million annually. $13 million.
Brad. NIL money you're talking about.
Right. Yeah, NIL money. And now they're talking. And so the thought is they clearly spent more than that in retaining those players and then gaining those new players.
That upgrading.
That
yeah.
Total, right. That total, they spent a whole lot more. By the way, that's before we even mentioned that they also took UCLA's head coach, Chip Kelly, and are paying him $2 million a year to be the offensive coordinator. So, anyway, that's a long way of saying the mood is good at Ohio State, but it's because they really weren't players in the NIL game like some of the others, apparently. They've now jumped in with both feet.
And I think this speaks to how quickly you can change the fortunes of a program. Now, granted, Ohio State was in the thick of the national championship race all season, ended up losing one game, not making the playoffs. It wasn't like, you know, they were, you know, sitting there in the ranked in the teens, and now all of a sudden they've become a national title contender. They didn't have that far to go. Mm-hmm. But there are other schools out there that could use NIL money to sign a few guys, upgrade at a few starting positions, and maybe go from that. Maybe go from being a team that finished somewhere around fifth in their conference last year mm-hmm. to now being one of the favorites to win the conference the following year with the better roster, and be right there in the thick of maybe not always the national championship race, but certainly, you know, a threat to maybe, you know, make it to a semifinal or something along those lines. And so, but I think when it comes to the national championship race, there are a few schools. Ohio State is certainly one of them. Texas is another one that comes to mind that have more money than most schools could ever dream of having.
Giant war chests, basically. Yeah, and they're spending from them.
The question to me is simply, how motivated are their donors? Right. How long can they keep that up? So in other words, like let's just say Ohio State wins the national championship this coming season. All right. You know, it's one thing when you haven't won a national championship in almost 10 years, and then your biggest rival wins one last year, And all of a sudden you have this extra layer of motivation to go out there and make sure that you end your drought and you get back ahead of them. That's what's happening in Columbus right now. But if they were to win, do those same donors pony up that same amount of money to keep the roster together to make sure that they are the best team in college football the next year? Maybe one more year, but how about 2 years down the road, 3 years? Well,
can they do it even year after year after year, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is the consistency.
Win, lose, whatever the atmosphere is, can they continue to find that money every year?
So,
every year.
Here are two cases. Let's just say Georgia right now. So Georgia's won two of the last three national championships. I just can't, even if Georgia's donors had the same amount of money as Ohio State's donors, Georgia's don't have the same sense of urgency right now. Like that national championship.
They might right now.
Only if they feel like, hey, you know what? We need to match Alabama's dynasty, not just simply, you know, win a national championship every now and then.
But if they feel like they want to win six in 12 years, there's an immediacy because they didn't get in.
And you're right. There's a greater immediacy now than there would have been this time last year, coming off back to back. But certainly their urgency, their need to win a national title is not as great as it would be at Ohio State, because they've just done it twice recently. Another thing to look at is Texas A&M a couple of years ago had that number one ranked signing class. And, you know, we all believe it was NIL fueled. The guys were getting money, which is fine. It was legal to come to Texas A&M. Almost all of them have since transferred out. But the thing is that never transferred into success on the field. Let's say A&M had gone 10-2 the following year. I think there's a good chance a lot of those donors would have come back, given a lot more. They would have had another great signing class. But at whatever point, whether it's because you win a title or whether it's because you lose that momentum, even the wealthiest donors, there's only so many years in a row that they're going to continue to give at that level. And I think maybe this is an equalizer in college football, because this is a part of recruiting now.
Here's the issue.
It's not just getting the players, but it's keeping them.
Some schools just have more resources, right, than others. And by that, I mean donors. In Ohio State and Texas, of course, they have traditionally had the largest budgets, the two of them. Those two schools go back and forth. And they also probably have the deepest donor bases when motivated. Other schools don't have it. And one of the things that we can talk about on another episode that I think is interesting is, I actually was talking with an athletic director this week, a guy I've known for a long time, and we were just having a good conversation. And they are, like a lot of schools, completing some upgrades, some very significant upgrades to their football facility, the practice facilities and stuff like that. And they've done some other things in other sports here recently. And one of the things that matter-of-factly the athletic director told me was, you know, had the NIL stuff come through earlier, if we hadn't already been working on these things and raised money for them and started them, I'm not sure we would have done these facilities. I'm glad we're doing them. I'm glad they're almost completed. But going forward, we have to think about, where should our resources go? And a lot of them are going to have to go, at least until something changes, into how do we do NIL?
Yeah.
How do we, and I think, help me out here. Maryland's coach.
Mike Loxley.
He told some folks last year that, if you give a player $25,000, he'd dress in a trash can. And what he meant was, you don't have to worry about facilities anymore because of NIL. I don't know that that's the case. I still think you have to sort of have facilities. But the days of the arms race being all about whoever has the biggest and best football facility or basketball locker room or whatever it is, or a slide in Clemson's thing, which is tremendous fun to slide down, by the way. I got a chance to do that. Those days are over, at least as long as NIL is set up the way it is now. And I know we all expect something to change, but those days are over. And so for a school with fewer resources, they're going to have hard questions about, where do I ask donors to put money? Is it into the athletic department proper, and maybe into capital projects we want to build? Or do I need to ask them, put money into this collective, which, as we now know, will come under the auspices of the athletic department. So at least the athletic department would be controlling it. Anyway, we could talk about that forever, but I didn't mean to drive us down a little rabbit
trail. That was good. That was relevant. I did remember the thing I was going to say at the end of the previous conversation, but I'm going to save it because it was only tangentially related to NIL. It was related to that conversation, but it's something that I can bring up a couple weeks from now and it'll still be just as relevant. So,
well, there's plenty of things we could talk about and plenty of things we could still talk about today, but we need to go ahead and hit the locker room, wrap up the first half, hit the locker room, get ready for the second half when we get to talk about our favorite topic in the second half, which is our shared faith in Jesus. And so let's go ahead and do that. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the second half of Gridiron and the Gospel, a Faith in College Football podcast, the Faith Half, right after this.
Welcome back into Gridiron and the Gospel, a Faith in College Football podcast, and it is time for the faith part of this podcast. The best part. And so, George, that means we're about to get into our favorite segment called On My Heart.
Absolutely. And On My Heart is presented by Legacy Way. Legacy Way, giving glory to God by sharing his love through generosity. You can find out more at legacyway.org. And this week, Brad, you've got something on your heart. And so tell us, what's on my heart today?
Yes. So recently been looking at the Sermon on the Mount, and for those who aren't familiar, there are a few chapters early in the book of Matthew, which is the very place where you see this. And this is in Matthew 5, and it's really starting around verse 21. And there are two things that Jesus is talking about here that I want to touch on. He mentions two of the Ten Commandments, and then he has a kind of a take on them that is maybe a little bit surprising when you read through it the first time. This is what really has been on my heart that I wanted to share. So the first one, it says in verse 21, "You've heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment.' But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says 'You fool' will be liable to the hell of fire." Okay, and then he goes on in verse 27. He says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And then he goes on to say, "If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away, for it is better that you lose one of your members and that your whole body be thrown into hell." Then he goes, similar thing with your right hand. And so what I think, when I read this, you see what Jesus is doing is he's focusing on these commandments, because I think it's so easy for us to look at those commandments and say, "Well, I'm not going to do that." Pulls it up with something that most of the people, if not all of the people who are reading this, are guilty of. It's like, you know what? You ever murder someone, but murder finds its roots in anger. Like that's what it starts off with. And that anger itself is a sin, especially like the wrong type of anger, specifically, not the righteous anger, but he says, you know, "But I say to you, anyone who's angry with his brother will be liable to judgment." And so what he's focusing on is, okay, what is the root cause of some of these bigger things? And how can we be more aware of not going down that road, you know, where we start this process of getting to that bigger point, because we've already committed sin without even getting to the big one. And the same thing with, you know, with committing adultery. He says, you know, "I say to you, everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And so it's much easier, obviously, to have that lust than it is to actually act on it. But of course, his point is that you've already sinned, even if you don't act on it, if you're having that lust. And so This is something I've just been thinking a lot about, which is like, what are these tip-offs, or kind of the gateway sends, if you want to call it. Like, and even if you are one of those people that is highly unlikely, and I'm going to say highly unlikely because I don't think any of us can ever say with certainty that we would never do one of these things, as certain as we may feel we are. I don't think any of us are beyond that because of our sinful nature. But we certainly, even though we might not be likely to commit the bigger sin, how often are we committing the lesser sin, if we're going to rank sins, if we're even going to get in that business of saying this sin is not as bad as that one, but a sin is a sin, right? And so that's what I am really kind of thinking about here, George, is how can I be more aware of when these base level sins are starting to creep in, and do a better job of preventing those from occurring?
Yeah, well, no, listen, that's right, because it's fairly easy for us to go, well, I'm not going to murder, I'm not going to commit adultery, and maybe it's harder to say that, especially for guys, right? But man, Jesus is so clearly talking about the heart, and it is so easy just to be angry. Matthew 5, verse 22. Angry with your brother or sister, with somebody else. And that is a sin that leads to, eventually down the road, can lead you to actually murder. But it's also a sin that's against a holy God, right? Anger.
Mm-hmm.
It's the root sin of murder. And it began in your heart. You got angry. When you get angry, by the way, what is it that's going on here? I'm angry because something didn't go the way I wanted it, and it should have, because I'm pretty important here, right?
It's a selfish emotion. Most
it's
of the
exactly
time,
right.
Anger.
It's pride, selfishness, and that erupts into anger, and then that can become something. But you're right. It starts in the heart. Murder starts in the heart. Anger is a heart sin, right? Adultery begins in the heart. And it's where we look at someone lustfully and we think about it. And you're right. They're like starter kit sins that take you down the road as you indulge them. You indulge in the anger, you indulge in the lust. It will take you down the road almost inevitably to the actual sins that we look on as big, air quotes, big sins. But man, we need to be pretty darn concerned about all the little sins, not just because of where they'll lead you, but because they're sins against a holy God. It's interesting to me that right before that, those two sort of sections in chapter 5 of Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says he didn't come to abolish the law or the prophets, but to fulfill. And it's interesting because then the very next thing he does is he talks about two things that were in the Ten Commandments, right? As you were talking about, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not commit adultery. And what he said was their heart issues. Their heart issues. You know what Jesus came to do? He came to give us the opportunity to have our hearts changed. Came to give us the opportunity to have our hearts changed. So, man, I love that you are just meditating, essentially, is what you're doing, on those things. I love that you're studying the Sermon on the Mount. The last few times, guys, if you haven't been listening, the last few times Brad has done on my heart, it's been coming right out of his Old Testament studies that he's teaching the students in his church. And I love that. But man, when Jesus starts teaching in the Gospels, don't you get excited about that, except for the parts where you get convicted, except for those parts,
exactly,
which is kind of where we are today.
Here's something else I just thought of when you mentioned right before that, what Jesus had said about, you know, coming to fulfill the law. It actually made me think about something that Jesus says, not immediately after, but within the same Sermon on the Mount. If you go to the beginning of chapter 7, Jesus is talking about judging hypocritically. And if you look at what he's getting at here, this would fall into that category. Like for those of us who might look judgmentally at someone who has committed murder, or more likely and say, well, you know what? I'm better than this person because I've never done that. Jesus is telling you right here, you're not really better than that person.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe you haven't made the obvious sin that everyone could see, you know, the murder or the adultery, which is much more likely to come to light than the lust in your heart. But you've still sinned nonetheless. And
yeah, that's
and
right.
Therefore, those of us who are judging people who have done this stuff, there's a really good chance that we're judging hypocritically.
Right.
When you look at the splinter, if we're guilty of the thing that he mentions right after that, you know,
in your brother's eye, you don't notice the beam of wood, the big log in your own eye.
Right.
That said, that there is a whole other faith segment of a podcast that we ought to do on that, because I heard somebody say this the other day. And I don't know that there's a way to know if this is true or not, but the idea is that John 3:16, for God so loved the world that whoever will believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. And maybe in our context, especially the college football context, and you start talking about Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But John 3:16 was probably the most well-known and most quoted verse in the Bible. Now, what is he doing? Why is he going there? Because the idea was that I read somewhere, and I'd give credit, but I can't remember where it was that probably isn't true now, that now it's do not judge so you won't be judged. It's Matthew 7:1, basically. Judge not lest you be judged would be sort of the, I don't know, I guess the King James version of that. Do not judge so you won't be judged. Before we get deep into that, we ought to realize we need to do that on another podcast. But I do find that interesting. And you're right. All of this is comparison to others, man. Before we start comparing ourselves to others and sort of saying, well, I'm better than that guy, man, we're all sinners in need of a savior. And you may not have traveled as far down the road to those air quotes big sins that we were talking about a minute ago, but man, you check your heart and your life. Are you angry?
Yep.
Are you lustful? And it's not even check your heart or your life, because you could be heading in those directions for the big sins, air quotes, that all of that's true. It's the lust, the anger, those are sins. Those are as big an offense before God as the others. So anyway, man, I love that that's on your heart. I love that's what's on your heart, man. And I love this segment.
Yeah. Love doing it every week. And yep. thanks to Legacy Way for making this possible every week. And so, George, that takes us to the conclusion of the podcast, which means it is time for our picks. And those, as always, are sponsored by Betterman. Betterman is calling an audible. They're giving men an easy-to-use playbook, a timeless strategy for how to win as a man. A free resource for small and large groups, Betterman is perfect for any gathering. Check them out at betterman.com. So what we're going to do now, George, is look at just kind of this theme of spring practices coming to an end. Obviously, one of the big topics is always, all right, key battles, position battles during the spring. It's very popular to look at, okay, what are the biggest ones to watch around the country? Let's be honest. If we're talking about the spring battles that are going to have the greatest impact on the national championship race, they're all going to be quarterback battles.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, even guys who don't win the starting job at certain positions can very easily get a lot of playing time at other positions. But quarterback is that one once you get that thing, it's tough for someone else to take it away. And so I just kind of want to go through and the two of us together rank what we think are the most intriguing quarterback battles of the spring. This is not to say that these are decided in any way at the end of spring practice, because we don't expect they will be. But the most compelling ones as they would affect the national championship race come this fall. So,
So by definition, they're going to need to be
number one.
Yeah, I think so. By definition, then, it's got to, there are going to be some super intriguing battles that may or may not be decided in the spring, probably will go into the fall, that we are not touching here, because we're sort of sticking with teams that we think, and it doesn't mean that we're not going to miss one, but that we think are, this is a team that looks like if they get this lined out, could be a national title contender, title contender. Okay, fair enough. Start with number one.
Okay, number one, we're going with Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And we just mentioned earlier in the podcast how they brought in Will Howard as a transfer from Kansas State. He had a lot of success at K-State. But I would also say that Will Howard, while he is probably an upgrade from Kyle McCord, who was Ohio State quarterback last year, if you look at the four quarterbacks, if you look at the four quarterbacks that the Buckeyes had before that, I don't see Will Howard right now. From what I've seen of him, I don't see him at that level. And it may simply be because Kansas State's wide receivers are not as good as Ohio State's, which I don't think there's anyone would argue with that. But if I'm correct that he's not quite at that level of talent, then I don't think it's impossible that he could eventually be unseated. Whether he's number one coming out of the spring or not, there are some other talented quarterbacks. And look, it's Ohio State. Like they have five-star backups. And I think this is one to keep an eye on because he may come in and just click right away. The Ryan Day says, okay, this is my guy. But there also could be a guy with a ton of talent who just played as much as Will Howard has, who could be waiting in the wings and just, you know, waiting to get that opportunity to go out there with the ones and show how good he is.
Well, I think that's fair. And Devin Brown, of course, would be sort of the alternate guy who most of us would think about as well. Maybe he'd have a shot to unseat Will Howard. But you know, we're sitting here talking about Will Howard, and I had a brain freeze. I was thinking of
Alan Bowman. Brown was there last year.
Alan Bowman, who's a Texas Tech to Oklahoma State guy. But yeah, so Devin Brown returns. But Will Howard is the odds-on favorite. One thing I would say is either quarterback could be in a good situation because of the addition of Chip Kelly as offensive coordinator.
Right.
From UCLA head coach. I think that's a big plus that probably won't get noted as we're looking at which quarterback has the edge here. But whichever quarterback ends up with the edge, I think Chip Kelly makes them better. Chip Kelly, if you guys haven't paid attention much to him since he was at Oregon, doesn't just run the blur offense that he used to run. He runs a lot of different stuff. He incorporates some NFL stuff, and they run the ball effectively. And so he's going to do that too. So I do think that is an intriguing quarterback battle. And if they can get it set up and they get consistent play out of their quarterback, Ohio State figures to be right in the mix all year long for a playoff berth. I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And let me just throw one other name in there. I believe the kid's name is pronounced Julian Sayin.
Right.
Who was either the first or second ranked quarterback in the incoming class. He originally was an early enrollee at Alabama, went through, bowl/playoff practice with Alabama leading up to the playoff game. And then when Saban announced his retirement, Sayin transferred and he went to Ohio State. And so, is a guy who just by all accounts has a ton of talent, no college experience yet. But wouldn't surprise anyone if he ends up, being in the mix as well. So just one other name.
Super interesting. And I'm glad you did that because you're right. Five-star big time quarterback recruit, enrolls early at Alabama, as you said, never ended up going to class, I guess. But transfers in and is competing or will be competing for this, to the extent that he's ready. Fascinating, the new world. It takes us back to sort of the new world of college football that he can do that. So,
yeah.
I'm glad you put Julian Sayin in there, too. So, all right. That's the one we find most intriguing. What do you got, number two? Because this is one, I like this. I agree with you. I think a lot of people are going to do a double take when you say it.
Right. Just segueing off of the previous name we mentioned, I think Alabama is really intriguing. Now, this, like you said, is going to be hard for people to grasp because Alabama does have a quarterback who finished, I believe it was sixth in the Heisman voting last year, Jalen Milroe. Yep. certainly had his moments. I mean, everybody remembers the, you know, the touchdown pass at the end of the game to beat Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Mm-hmm. But he also had a lot of games last year that just were, I mean, let's just call it like it is, pedestrian. The guy clearly has a ton of potential. He's a lot of upside. Nick Saban saw that very early and kind of put all of his eggs in that basket. But having watched Milroe and looking at the style of quarterback that he is, and as a guy who, look, I don't have the trained eye that a lot of, you know, coaches and former players out there do, but I've watched a lot of football. And he doesn't seem very instinctive to me. He's not a guy who I really see as reading defenses extremely well. And mm-hmm. I contrast that with what we saw from Michael Penix Jr. in that Washington offense last year under Kalen DeBoer.
Which theoretically is the offense we're going to see at Alabama going forward.
Right, and that's the big question.
Right.
Yeah, the big question is Kalen DeBoer going to say, okay, Milroe's my guy. I see his potential to be able to do this and this really well, and therefore I'm going to craft my offense to match his strengths? Or is DeBoer more likely to say, hey, this is my offense, this is what I do, it's basically what you saw at Washington? And if that's the case, then, I mean, Alabama, much like Ohio State, has some very talented guys on the depth chart who I think could challenge Jalen Milroe if it's about, you know, who's the best fit for an offense similar to what we saw last season in Seattle.
I completely agree with you. And it seems a little bit, and listen, I'm not completely convinced that we wouldn't have some kind of conversation like this if Nick Saban was still there. Now, first of all, we might be talking about Julian Sayin, right?
Right.
We wouldn't be talking about Austin Mack as the potential guy who's in there. He's a transfer from UW, from Washington, a former four-star quarterback,
So a guy that DeBoer recruited.
DeBoer recruited to run his system, has been in the system at Washington. We wouldn't be talking about him, but I'm not completely convinced that we wouldn't. Let's put it this way. I don't think if you, Tim, and he wanted to tell you the truth, that Nick Saban was satisfied with the quarterback play at Alabama last year. And I know that Jalen got better. Okay, clearly got better. He also had to make a crazy good throw, which he made, and have Auburn have inexplicably poor defense in the final seconds, or they don't, you know, the season's completely different. But he, you know, it isn't even about, and I think Nick Saban was very happy with how Jalen progressed, just his individual progression, but was the quarterback play at Alabama up to Nick's standards? And I think the answer would be no. So we might
I was going to say, especially when you consider, like I said before, the Ohio State quarterbacks before Kyle McCord. Okay, think about who the Alabama quarterbacks were before Jalen Milroe.
That's right.
Yeah, you had Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Tua Tagovailoa, and Jalen Hurts. Like, you know, four NFL starters. So, or at least Mac Jones was a starter. That's a high bar.
Well, and the standard is win the national title. Good. That's the standard. Now, obviously. Right. But when you inject the new coaching staff in, then I really do think that this is at least an intriguing battle to watch. And look, one thing I would tell you is guys who follow quarterbacks, who coach quarterbacks, will tell you that a quarterback quite often makes his largest jump from year one to year two as a starter. So if that were to hold, Jalen Milroe may get a lot better, but it bears watching. So I agree with you. That is an intriguing battle. I don't know that we should expect somebody to supplant Jalen, and certainly wouldn't expect it to be announced at the end of spring, but it's something to watch.
Yeah. Okay. And so let me just run through as we decide on a third one here. Some of the other highly ranked teams from last year that will have a new starting quarterback. Obviously, the two teams that play the national championship game, both will, Michigan and Washington. But I think in both cases, we know who that guy is going to be. And then Texas has a returning starter in Quinn Ewers.
Right.
Georgia, obviously, returning starter as well.
Two very good quarterbacks, Carson Beck, right?
And then we get to, you know, kind of Florida State. And then my question with Florida State isn't so much who's going to be the quarterback. It's they have a lot to replace. Right. Because they had a lot of key contributors who were gone from last year's team. That doesn't mean that, you know, they're not still good enough to win the ACC. But will they be at the level that they were this past mm-hmm. season? It's doubtful. You look, you know, elsewhere in the ACC. Look, I mean, one of the big transfers that came in nationally was Cam Ward, who went to Miami. The question is he that good to be able to get Miami immediately to that level? And not to mention, I think it's pretty much assumed he's the quarterback anyway. So that's another one. And then LSU, obviously, a Heisman winner from last year, Jaden Daniels has to be replaced. But I think in this case, we probably know who the starter is. And then here's where I think we're going, George. You can tell me if I'm right. I think we're going to go number three is Oregon.
Yep, that's where I would go. And let me just say this. In part because we think Oregon is a team that's going to get overlooked a little bit, maybe, because of among other things, they're moving into the Big Ten. But I think if they get the quarterback situation right, and I think they have a chance to, they could be super dangerous. And you know, let's keep in mind the playoff expands. So I do, you know, it used to be you had to get into the playoff and then could you actually win it? Now it's going to be a little easier to get into the playoff and you still have to ask, could you win it? If they get quarterback right, and they did the last 2 years with Bo Nix, mm-hmm. if they get quarterback right, they are loaded. And of course, they have two transfers who were, you know, big time for different reasons. One of them is Dylan Gabriel, transfer from Oklahoma, or obviously started his career at UCF. I mean, he was really good for OU. Really good. Now, he's not probably a great pro prospect because he's about 5'2" or something. Not really, but he's he's a small guy. But he can run an offense and throw the football. And he's got some mobility. And then Dante Moore, who was a 5-star prospect, transferred from UCLA. And I don't know that I would call that a real battle, although it could be. I think Dylan Gabriel has to be the odds-on favorite to win it.
Yeah.
But it sure looks like to me that's two pretty darn good options to replace a guy who was really good for them, Bo Nix, in those 2 years after he moved from Auburn to Oregon.
And here's the fun thing is that we don't have to wait the entire season to see how good Oregon is because, as you mentioned, they are now in the Big Ten. And October 12th, they host Ohio State. November 2nd, they are at Michigan. So that's going to be fun. But you know what? Outside of that, I mean, I don't see a lot of threats. Okay, I mean, at Wisconsin, we don't know what the Badgers will be. That's obviously a tough place to play. But I certainly would give Oregon a decided talent edge there. And then they host Washington at the end of the season. I mean, just looking at that schedule, I mean, those two games are obvious mm-hmm. hurdles. But you know, with the expanded playoff, even if they were to lose both of those and win the rest 10-2, they're in the playoff. Yeah. And I'm with you. I think they've got good enough talent that they're a threat to anybody once they get there. So be a fun team to keep an eye on.
For sure. And those are some fun battles that we'll keep an eye on, not just really in the spring, probably go into August, but super, super intriguing battles to watch. So, you know, thanks to our picks partner and Betterman for that every week. It's always interesting to come up with different ideas. So, and Brad, that's about it. We need to wrap this thing up for the week.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
All right. Thanks to Legacy Way again for sponsoring On My Heart, our favorite segment. And thanks especially, as always, to Subsplash, our presenting partner. So much more than just a church software, Subsplash brings people together, empowers giving, fosters discipleship, and transforms lives. SUBSPLASH.com/SBC. Subsplash.com/SBC will get you a special discount for churches if you want to check it out. But hey, listen, we'll be back next week for sure. So visit us online at gridironandthegospel.com. Find us on Twitter or Instagram, and the handle is @gridiron_gospel. Email us at gridirongospelpod@gmail.com or reach out to either of us on Twitter @George Schroeder and @JBradEdwards. And whatever you do, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe in your favorite podcast app. We're on all the major podcasting platforms. Just search for Gridiron and the Gospel, or you can follow the links on the show website. And tune in next week for more. We've got plenty to talk about, always do. Gridiron and the Gospel, a faith and college football podcast, is a BP Sports production.